The water is not crimson, actually. It's mostly black, and the tide, I mean, they're really far from the shore and underwater, so the tide isn't really a factor, but it's a crimson tide, because, you know, I why it was called that, but still, Crimson Tide was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Welcome to the number one movie in America, Sequestisode number two. I would credit whichever podcast said Sequestisode, but I can't remember which one it is. Hi, I'm here with some game soldier ants marching into the pandemic. It's Robin Hitchcock.
Hi there.
And Camila Adams.
Hello.
And I'm Sean Collier, and if nothing else, we're very happy to be with you recording weekly for now. That's fun.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. Something to do, you know, until things get back to normal-ish. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's going to happen, but no, I'm excited to have something to look forward to every week, something different to break up the monotony.
I'm just glad to not be left to my own devices for picking movies, because it's one, I'll talk about the fact that I've watched four Chucky movies during You Can't Handle the Truth, but two, like, the only problem I have with movies right now is, like, I feel like I'm not making wise enough decisions.
I keep defaulting every night and just rewatching Karate Kid.
Okay.
In the last 4 months, I've probably watched that movie 10 times.
What is it about Karate Kid specifically?
I don't know. I think it might be a soothing thing, a nostalgia thing. Like, I'm all about the movies. I'm all about the trilogy. Let's be clear. It's a trilogy. That's it.
I really like the next Karate Kid.
Stop it. Stop it right now.
I was just the right age when it came out where I was like, yeah, a girl who can beat people up. Two-time Academy Award winner Hilary Swank.
We will have.
Because I don't have to pay much attention to it because I've seen it so much anyway.
Oh, that's
so
helpful.
Yeah.
We will run down all of our movie choices during You Can't Handle the Truth. But now we get to talk about a movie that I think none of us had seen.
I had definitely seen this, like, edited for TBS, probably not all in order kind of situation. This was definitely my first time, like, sitting down and watching it as an adult. Also, I didn't really remember it. We'll get into it.
Yeah, I'd never seen it before. I don't usually understand what's going on in military movies, so I tend to stay away from them. So I would have had no reason to watch this movie.
Oh, and this one was jargon heavy. I don't think it had that problem, but there are a lot of lines that are just like, the VP has a 1-2-4 in the 6. And it's right. I'm going to use context clues.
So I'm stealing this from the director of the Matt Damon, Edward Norton movie Rounders.
Okay.
But which, what a weird deep cut. But
right.
He said that movie has a lot of gambling jargon and poker jargon in it. And he said, it's like watching Shakespeare. Like, even if you don't understand every word, you understand what they're saying. And I was reminded of that with this jargon-heavy movie.
Yeah, I think my problem is I tend to try to get too deep into, like, I try too hard to understand what's happening in a lot of movies, which is why time travel movies are really not my favorite, because I always find that there's always a thread that just knocks the whole theory out of the way. And so I'm just like, I think sometimes I just can't just dispel belief and just be like, all right, take me on this journey.
This will be another obstacle for you if you keep watching Harry Potter movies. Let's do a recap, because I have a lot of thoughts about this movie. It is my turn. Would someone like to time me?
I don't have my watch on because life isn't real anymore.
I have my phone here. I'm hold on.
I think time is real. I don't think days are real. Someone earlier said, what is it Tuesday? And I said, it's 9. The day of the week is 9. I'm going to continue.
Matter. This yeah. shit doesn't matter anymore.
They All just right. have numbers.
All right, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
And go.
A Russian nationalist group takes over a portion of Chechnya containing nuclear missile silos, threatening nuclear war if either Russia or the U.S. messes with them. Part of the U.S. response is a nuclear submarine captained by Frank Ramsey, an amiable douchebag played by Gene Hackman. The new executive officer on the ship is Ron Hunter, a thoughtful young man played by Denzel Washington. Ramsey loves war. Hunt does not. Eventually, they get a message to get ready to fire the missiles, but the next message doesn't get through. Crap, I lost the thing. This counts against me. Wait, here we go. The next message doesn't get through. Ramsey says they need to fire. Hunter says they can't. And there's a Russian sub firing at them. It's time for a mutiny party. Hunter removes Ramsey from power. Then Ramsey gets some guys to mutiny against Hunter. Then Hunter launches a double mutiny. At the last minute, it turns out that the second message was saying that the rebels had surrendered and absolutely not fired the nukes. Denzel was right. Gene Hackman was kind of a dick about it even then. But he retired and gave Denzel the ship, so everyone is happy.
Well, it was 102, but... I mean, if we pull out your stumble, then you probably made it at just that.
Doing it on the phone, and I touched a thing, and it
oh,
went to
no!
the next comment.
But it was I really did enjoy the recap in itself. It was very, right. It helped me out a lot in figuring out what happened in the film.
Mutiny party.
Yeah.
They just keep mutinying at one point.
That's what they should have called this movie.
Really? The Crimson Tide is just a nice set of words. I'll get to the Faxi segment in a minute. Here's the big takeaway for me that I was surprised at. I really loved this movie.
It's
really?
So good. Like, did not like, Camille is making a face.
It's not like I didn't like it. It's just, okay. We'll get into it. But I'm just surprised that you guys are just like, oh my God, yes.
I mean,
but again, it's just personal preference. That's what it comes down to.
I guess that I just thought my expectation was that it was like a very middling action war movie. And it's actually like really tight suspense, and we'll get into it. But the other thing I really liked about this movie is that there's not really a bad guy. Like Gene Hackman is douchey and wrong, but he's mm-hmm. not evil.
Right.
Yeah, they have, I mean, I don't know all of the military rules, obviously, but like, they both have a pretty solid argument.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of working out what to do. That was the turn. Like early on, I was like, oh, this is a well-done war movie. And when it got so tense and so suspenseful, and by the way, so well directed, then I was like, I am fully on board for this. On board. It's a pun.
Hey-o.
I also was fascinated going back to it being well directed. This is Tony Scott, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is a Don Simpson, Jerry Bruckheimer joint producer wise, and it shares so much DNA with The Rock and all their other mid-90s movies that I can't think of right now. Like the score sounds virtually identical to the score from The Rock, but it's not directed by Michael Bay. And so it's like, oh, wow, the way that they make movies when you have someone competent telling the story is so exciting.
Yeah.
I did write down the following SAT question. Tony Scott is to Rain as John Woo is to Doves. Like, he just loves, like, we're having a beach in the rain and you can stare at the rain. I'm not the biggest fan of his, rest in peace, obviously, but like a lot of his movies, I'm like, that's fine. Some of them I actively dislike. I would not say that I'm like, I was ever like, oh, this guy really has it going on until I watched this movie.
He's the guy who does a lot of movies with weird subtitles, right?
you mean the caption like floated and stuff during Man on Fire?
And Domino, did he do that?
Yes, he did Domino. Well, he directed Domino. I like Domino.
He did Unstoppable? That movie is so good. Like, it's good like this one is good, where it's just, like, really tight.
And also the taking of Pelham 123. So he's worked with Denzel a few times, and Deja Vu, Man on Fire. All right, look, he's got, like, Denzel. He was, like, all up Denzel's ass.
And which, why not?
You know, it's fine. Yeah. But, I mean, I guess they had a great chemistry.
Enemy of the State, The Fan, True Romance, Last Boy Scout, Days of Thunder, Beverly Hills Cop 2. And of course, Top Gun. That's the big thing. I don't like Top Gun. I know that is blasphemy to some people. I think I first.
I didn't see Top Gun until like 2000, and I was like in the hospital, hopped up on morphine at the time. So
honestly, that might be the best circumstances to watch Top Gun.
And then you're thinking to yourself, why have I heard the synth cue from Take My Breath Away 8 times?
Exactly.
Is that the drugs? No, that is the movie.
It's not the drug. Okay, it's good to know. Because that was one of my questions.
Because you mentioned Unstoppable, I should shout out our erstwhile co-host, Aaron Kleiber, who's in Unstoppable.
Is he?
He is Ethan Suplee's, like, body double.
Shut the front door. I love Ethan Suplee.
So, like... There's a shot of Ethan Suplee falling down, and that's Aaron. And there's a shot of like Ethan Suplee's hands on the train controls. Those are Aaron Kleiber's hands. So.
All right. Way to go, Aaron.
Yeah.
My friend Jared DeGeorge is also in it. He's one of the guys who does the yes, laughter, clap thing once they fix it at the end.
An important job.
Yes, which is also done very well in this movie because I loved how... Oh, yeah. There was that one guy with the kind of like rat-faced guy.
Lilo something. The kid from A Bronx Tale?
No, not that guy. He's just one of the guys who's like, I'm in the Navy because I'm a geek.
Oh, that guy. Yeah, he is a rat face.
And everybody's laughing and clapping, and he has this moment of like sadness almost. He like looks like he's like, I'm not really relieved. I'm terrified at how close we came. And that's just such like a little throwaway moment from a like whatever one step below tertiary is character. Like, and
I'm thinking about
this.
If I'm thinking about the same thing you're thinking about, I thought it was more like, oh shit, I chose the wrong side.
In this argument. Right. Same thing. Same thing. I also love George Zunza in this. I also really love saying Zunza.
Which one's George Zunza?
He's the guy, he's on Denzel's side. He was on the first season of Law and Order, if that means anything to you. And
the heavier guy?
Yep, and he's the one who's like, we're about to implode as they're sinking.
Mm. Oh, yeah, he was the guy who was like, I don't agree with you, except the other guy was more wrong.
Correct. So.
Yeah. He's great. Oh, was Ryan Felipe the one who was staring at fish?
Yes, for two shots.
Okay.
There were two shots.
Ryan Felipe's first movie.
He has four scenes or shots, and two of them he's staring at the fish at the aquarium. I don't know why, but yeah.
Wow.
You didn't catch those billowy lips?
Did not recognize him.
Yeah, he's a baby. This was like there was a call to like all young wannabe male actors. We need a bunch of yins to come out of here.
little baby Vigo was so adorable.
Oh, bless his heart. And a slender James Gandolfini.
Mm-hmm. Right, making fun of some other guy for being heavy. I'm like, buddy.
Like, Jim.
You just wait.
Yeah.
You'll get there.
This is also how that Steve Zahn looks like Viggo Mortensen's slightly less genetically gifted younger brother. Like, the same setup with like less dramatic features.
Right, yeah.
My friend Regina always says that Steve Zahn's mouth opens like an envelope.
Yes. That is correct. How about the Factsy segment? Do you want to hear some facts?
Sure do.
Crimson Tide was released May 12, 1995. It was the 11th number one movie of the year. Won its first weekend with $18.6 million, easily beating French Kiss in second place. And French Kiss only narrowly beat the fourth weekend of a recent Nomia subject, While You Were Sleeping, $6.5 million. Those two movies, the top five at the same time. The only other new release in the top 10 that weekend was The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill But Came Down a Mountain, which debuted in fifth with $2.8 million.
I have a note about that. Do you want me to interrupt or put a pin in it?
Oh, interrupt. Tell me about The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill But Came Down a Mountain.
That's a movie?
It's a Hugh Grant movie. When I was in middle school and had, you know, limited babysitting spending money, I loved the movie Empire Records. And
yes!
I went to, you
Rex
know,
Manning Day is coming up.
Exactly. And I went to one of those stores that used to sell media, and I was considering buying it on VHS with my limited funds. But I was like, I need to go to the other stores. I need to hit the rest of the mall and see if I have the money left. But there was only one copy, and I didn't want someone else to buy it. So I hid it behind a copy of The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill and Came Down a Mountain, because who would buy that? But sure enough, when I came back to the store and did purchase Empire Records on VHS, someone had bought the copy
of
The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill and Came Down a Mountain. So someone in central New Jersey wanted to own that film.
I remember that movie because I feel like that was a movie that my parents were like, we're watching an actual movie that we'll enjoy that happens to be rated PG, so we don't have to send you out of the room. And so I'm pretty sure I saw it, and it was vaguely charming, but I just stopped paying attention and started reading WWF magazine at a certain That's my memory of that film. Also, my friend Katie Bucco, who I knew in high school and college, was so obsessed with Empire Records that she glued quarters to her floor.
Her parents were thrilled.
Yeah. Respect.
Crimson Tide was only a 1 week number one movie in America. It fell in its second week to the debuting Die Hard with a Vengeance. Die Hard with Vengeance debuted to 22.1 million. Crimson Tide in second with 11.5 million in that second weekend. And it hung around in the 10 for 7 weeks overall, earning a total of $91.3 million just outside of the top 10 of 1995. It finished 11th for the year. Just behind Die Hard with a Vengeance and just ahead of Waterworld. Crimson Tide was nominated for 3 Oscars. It lost Best Sound Effects Editing. I think that's the one that's Best Sound Editing now, Robin.
I think it's actually the reverse, which is very annoying and confusing.
It lost one sound award to Braveheart and the other sound award to Apollo 13. Its biggest nomination was Best Editing. It is a Best Editing nominee alongside Apollo 13, Babe, Braveheart, and 7. Apollo 13 won that one. Robin, tell me if this is not your impression. I think this is one of those movies that would have been a Best Picture nominee if there had been 10 nominees instead of 5.
That's a great question. I do not think that is true. 1995 was a real weird Oscar year. Like, Il Postino was nominated for Best Picture. So maybe there would be room, but I more think that was, the Oscars were sort of like Harvey Weinstein was starting to have his pull, hence Il Postino. They were kind of overcorrecting from Forrest Gump beating Pulp Fiction. I think that this is kind of like a really well-done popcorn movie that the Oscars weren't quite ready to get back to.
That sounds accurate. I wonder if it would have been close. I'm sure it was in the race. I'm sure there were 4-year considerations for Crimson Tide.
Yeah.
But no, it did not make the cut of 5. Those were Braveheart, Apollo 13, Il Postino, Babe, and Sense and Sensibility. Crimson Tide is, however, a Grammy Award winner. It took the Grammy for Best Score Soundtrack for Dual Media, beating out the scores of Batman Forever, The Cure, and Ed Wood, as well as a Wynton Marsalis album that mostly had music from Peanuts cartoons. The late winner, by the way, of Best Score Soundtrack for Visual Media is Hildur, everyone's favorite score composer, but not for Joker, for the score for Chernobyl on HBO. Finally, in the Faxi segment, uncredited rewrites on Crimson Tide were completed by Quentin Tarantino. He had recently worked with Tony Scott on True Romance, and he punched up the Crimson Tide script. The credit writer is Michael Schiffer. This is when Quentin was doing a bunch of stuff between Pulp Fiction and Jackie Brown. He was said to have written all of the pulp culture references, which is why the Silver Surfer and Star Trek scenes are in there.
Okay, but the Star Trek scene is total bullshit.
I think I missed the Star Trek scene.
Go on.
No, I just got upset about that because, like, they're talking about fixing the radio, and I'm like, that's not Scotty's job.
That's some good nerding.
Yeah.
I love the Silver Surfer scene was such a great release valve on the tension at that point.
Yeah.
With the way that Denzel transitions into it, like, Denzel is going to rip this guy a new asshole, and then he gives his Silver Surfer takes.
Right.
Excellent. Robin, take me through your reaction, and then Camila's, to see if either one of you talked me down from my rating at all.
No, I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. Like I said, I love that there's no real bad guy. I love that we are in the same position that they are in, that we don't know what's going on. We don't know what the Russians are doing. We don't know what the actual order is. We do know that Denzel is right, just kind of from that's the way movies work.
Yeah.
Because it's Denzel.
Right. I also want to say that I kept saying out loud, like, Denzel Washington is the greatest actor of all time, period. It's just true. He's so, so good. And Gene Hackman was great, too. I thought it was kind of funny that we did two movies in a row with Gene Hackman as an overzealous military type.
Didn't even make it.
Ah, right?
Forgot that was him and Ants.
Totally.
Also, going back to the little Oscars piece, this movie has 3 two-time Academy Award winners in it. Gene Hackman, and weird cameo from Jason Robards at the end.
Oh yeah.
Why? Who knows?
Just he was probably on set anyway for some reason or another, and they're like, hey, Jason, you want to hop in here for a second?
We have a naval uniform that fits you. Can you come over?
I wanted that last 4 minutes to be a whole other movie. Like, I was like, yeah, but how are they going to explain this to the military brat? Like, if there had been a sequel that was like a Few Good Men style tribunal on these events, I would have started watching it immediately after.
I love that idea.
Camila, yeah, take us through your slightly cooler reaction.
Yeah, so, all right. Again, this is going to end. It's my score is going to all just come down to the fact of a personal preference of what type of movie this is. The acting was phenomenal. It was great. And the directing was amazing in this as well. Like, everybody's acting their asses off. Like, even, you know, poor Ryan Phillippe with no lines, basically. I think he says like one line from him all the way up to Denzel, obviously. I loved the watching Gene and Denzel go head to head. Like, that was like, there was a great amount of tension there. And just seeing these two seasoned actors just like kind of go at it on screen is I love shit like that, like to watch them kind of out act each other.
Same.
There was a moment when Gene's starts to really see Gene's, you know, we've always done it like this, I'm the boss attitude, like when he's like, I made the decision, I'm the captain of this boat, now shut the fuck up, like that. Like, his tantrum was it was just like, all right, this brings it up a few more notches for me. Like, that's when I started to get interested. It's like, okay, all right, I'm here now. And it was just, you know, it was fun to kind of pinpoint and see like all the different actors in there that I knew from something else. And even Ricky Schroeder is in here. And this is a great movie to have in your back pocket for 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. So
just kind of
go through there. And I mean, it was... Was it a good movie? I enjoyed-ish it. Like, I enjoyed the acting of the film. The story that was being told, not my favorite. And again, like, I just kind of got caught up in all the jargon. And, like, you know, I'm at one point, I'm like, are these words that we're supposed to know? Is the writer assuming that, you know, this movie is just specifically for folks that are in the military? Or they're just like, fuck you, you know, whatever. You'll figure it out. So.
I think the latter.
Which... Sort of, kind of, I did, but again, like, I got kind of caught up in the, it took me, like, the whole, what was it, EAM was the light that was blinking, and finally, I pieced that together when I saw the actual message, like, emergency action message or something.
I was an hour in, and I went, XO is executive officer.
Oh, thank you, because I still didn't know what that was.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of the naval jargon that I was like, oh, I know this because of Star Trek.
Oh, really?
Because most space things borrow naval things.
There was a moment where, again, I was probably wasn't paying full attention, but at some point, like in towards the end of the film, Denzel gets on the horn and he's like, this is Captain Kirk. Or he said something about Captain Kirk. And it was like during like one of the tense moments. I think this was like when Gene was already locked up in the mess hall or wherever. And I was like, have I just not been paying attention? Has this character's name been Kirk? His last name been Kirk? So is this a reference to something that was done with the Star Trek thing?
It was him connecting to the guy who he said, you need to go be my Scotty.
Oh, Lilo?
Yeah.
Was that Lilo? Okay. All right. So, yeah. I mean, it's, again, you know, I was fine with it. I fell asleep last night when I watched it at first, and I came back and finished it because, you know, that's also the true thing. Like, if it doesn't matter if I'm supposed to be reviewing it or not. If I fall asleep on it and I don't want to finish it, it's not going to get finished. But I was thoroughly interested in finding out how this ended and how things wrapped up. And I was a bit perturbed in the beginning when Gene rolls out, speaking of like the whole rain, Tony Todd or Tony Scott and his rain. And he's like, and all I'm like, he's giving this grandiose speech. And all I'm thinking is, you bastard, you have this poor dog out here in this rain, in this downpour.
Like, was I the only one trying to figure out where that dog poops?
apparently wherever the fuck he wants to, because Gene Hackman is the type, or his character is the type of man who will let that dog piss inside and not clean it up. Because there was that whole scene where he just let that dog pee. And I guess I don't understand submarines, but I'm just like, should there be smoking in the submarine? Should dogs be allowed in a submarine?
I cannot imagine that, like, a naval submarine in World War II was not the smokiest place ever. So I'm willing to accept the smoke.
Gotcha.
But like with the dog, I was like, I mean, he can't go outside.
Right.
Maybe there's a designated, like, you know, place, but he probably is going in like the equivalent of a box. So you're telling me that Gene Hackman's fancy classical music and fine cigars stateroom also smells like dog shit all the time? This is distracting.
Yes, absolutely. That dog, he probably didn't even have the decency to have like a litter box. I mean, literally, that dog pooped wherever the fuck he wanted to, and Gene left it there.
When he was making that speech, rain, and there was something like, if you expected less, you should have joined the Air Force.
Yeah.
Was that a Top Gun dig?
Maybe because there was all the, you know, they had time to play volleyball. I don't know. Was that?
Weren't they in the Navy in Top Gun?
No, they're,
oh, they're in the
they're
Air Force.
Flying planes.
The Navy has planes.
Do they?
Yeah.
See, I don't understand military. I have no idea. If the Navy has planes, why do we need an Air Force? No, I'm just
good question. No, I think that I might be thinking of a different movie. I think that there's a thing where they make fun of Air Force pilots for being bad at being Air Force pilot. Yeah, that's probably
sure
not Top Gun, because Top Gun was like literally funded by the military. So that's not a joke. That's real life.
Oh.
I know.
Well, I just loved it for the reason it was so suspenseful. I loved the way it was directed and shot, particularly the drama he got out of really static locations. You know, there's only so many sets, and this was visually engaging the whole time. I really loved when the ship was going up or down, the way they shot the angles and the people like adjusting bodies against them was just really well done. But more than that, just literally on the edge of my seat, even knowing like this is probably gonna all work out.
Right.
You know?
It's not
go ahead, Camille.
Oh, it's not an easy task to hold attention like that in just one, like in a submarine. Like the whole thing takes place in this very enclosed space. And yeah, that was done very well. I agree about you know, just
I'm going to disagree with you there. I think that submarines are one of those things that's like tailor-made for, like, you have a leg up if you're making a suspense movie in a submarine, because it's an innately suspenseful situation.
Hmm. Just because they're trapped in underwater?
Correct.
Okay. Agree to disagree.
I did write down a note to myself to take that submarine tour at the Carnegie Science Center in 2 to 4 months. I was like, now I want to be on a submarine. I also was like, oh man, I'm going to read the book. This is definitely like based on a Tom Clancy novel or something. And it's not.
It's
actually not. No.
I mean,
I was stunned.
It's not, but it is.
Right. I know I could find a good 80 books that are basically this if I wanted to, but I wanted the source material, and it's just some guy and then Quentin Tarantino punching it up.
I'm also really surprised by that, Quentin.
When you first said that, I'm like, what? But then once we remembered Silver Surfer and Star Trek, I was like, okay, that makes sense.
And it was also, right after True Romance.
Right. Also confirmed, they're in the Navy in Top Gun.
Really?
In Top Gun?
They're in the Navy in Top
Gun.
Wow. I mean, I guess they're on an aircraft carrier and you need pilots on the air, but this is stunning. You know,
well, take my breath away. I just didn't I had no idea.
On that note, let's rate. I'll go last. Camila.
Okay. You know, and I guess in addition to everything that else that I said about this, it's always Denzel just brings up the real estate just a little bit more every time he's on screen. Because, like, the fucking stare down of him when he stares down his traitorous Vigo. Like, come on. He had to say not near word. So I'll give it 62.
62. Robin.
I'm going to go 84.
Wow.
Really enjoyed it very much.
And at a certain point, I started thinking to myself, is this getting my highest score ever? And yeah, it is. I give it a 91.
Wow.
Sean made it to the 90s, finally.
Popped your cherry.
I just had no, you know, anything I could have had a problem with, I felt nitpicky. And so I went solidly into that top tier. That gives us an average of 79. 79 is the average, fire is the final score. And I don't have the grid up, so I don't know where that lands. We'll tell you later. So let's look at the bingo card for a minute, shall we?
That's tied with Child's Play.
That score is tied with Child's Play? Near the top of our list, then?
Yeah.
All right. I know it's nice to raise a movie instead of always lowering them.
Right.
Good
usually
job.
I'm bringing them down a little bit. No, it's higher than Child's Play. This is a 79. Child's Play was a 79.
I thought, okay. Shit, this is number 3.
So this is number 3, behind only Speed and Ocean's 11.
All right.
Half a point ahead of What About Bob.
Way to go, Denzel.
I'm giving him much of the credit. So, to the bingo card. So, yes, we've definitely got war covered.
Anti-Russian.
Anti-Russian.
I'm going to go ahead with anti-Russian. At first, I was like, well, is it? But it's, remember the Cold War? Let's pretend it's still happening along right. the lines of several other movies that we have watched, hence it being in the bingo card in the first place. So I'm going to go yes.
Now, I wasn't thinking this. I didn't think it all the way through, but it probably doesn't count. But I guess it would have to be a current child actor, not someone who was a child actor, such as Ricky Schroeder.
I agree.
No, I think we're looking for Haley Joel Osment or similar square. So I think
character learn the error of his ways?
That's what I was going to ask.
He did not.
Gene Hackman didn't. But what about all of the other guys? What about Ratface?
Ratface.
I don't think anyone. I think everyone left this going, I was right, and it worked out for me. Or I was right, it just happened to work out for the other guys. I think that's every character.
And all plus, right. It's just they're all standing by the military protocol, basically, right? Like that's what they were doing. It wasn't necessarily like a real, like they had a real thought in their mind about what was happening. It was like, this is protocol. This is how we do things. So I think they were all still on board with, you know, I'm a military guy, and this is how we go.
That's a very good point. All right, so we just got anti-Russian. Anybody get bingo?
No.
No, that didn't really help.
It'll happen for us someday.
Coming of age.
For Marvel. Still waiting for Marvel. Maybe in a few minutes. But first, it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. I know we've been watching things. Who's got something to recommend or trash?
The Hunt. I recommend The Hunt.
Do you?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I liked the it was just campy and just enough dark humor for me. And I also, you go in, there's not very many big names to begin with in the movie. And I think probably the biggest name aside from Hilary Swank would be Emma Roberts, who's like is in there. And spoiler alert, but like when she showed up, I really can't stand this girl. And so she showed up when I realized it was her. I'm like, man, I really hope she's the first to go. And she was. So she's only in it for about 5 minutes. So I was very pleased. And it just kind of keeps on going like that. And again, Ethan Suplee, always a plus.
Yeah.
Working. And I really I don't know the lead actress's name, the one, like the final girl. But
Betty Gilpin from Glow.
Oh, she's in Glow. Like the only other thing I'd seen her in was Nurse Jackie. And she has phenomenal like comedic chops, so I was really it was good to see her in this. And just like things like with in the, you've seen it, right, Sean?
Yes.
Okay, so when she buys the pack of cigarettes, she's like, "You done fucked up, bitch. Cigarettes in Arkansas are $6." Like that. That's what really just like, I am so into this movie right now.
It has great, that's why I was disappointed by it, because it does have those great comedic moments and good performances. And I thought that its politics were just like muddled and annoying.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, if you had played this a little less preachy, I really would have liked it. But I should say, with things that I was like, this is not worth a trip to the movie theater, may well be worth the decision of your house to press play. And I think The Hunt is that way, particularly for if you like that dark, satirical horror. Yeah, sure, go ahead and watch The Hunt.
Yeah, you're right. The politics were very muddled, and it wasn't easy to be like, okay, so whose side am I supposed to be on here? Like, who am I supposed to be rooting for? So if you just kind of ignore that and just kind of place your own reasonings in there for each camp, then it's much more enjoyable.
Sometimes people don't know where to find these. If it's all of the things that we've talked about that are recent releases that are now streaming, like The Hunt, Invisible Man, Onward, Bloodshot as of today, usually either Google Play or Apple Movies,
Vudu,
or if you have cable, if you have traditional cable, go to your cable on demand, and they're probably in there for rental as well.
Yep.
Robin?
Well, we got a Switch, so I have not been watching as many movies and have been playing a lot of Animal Crossing. So that's where I'm at. We were going to watch The Invisible Man, and then my cat scared me, and I was like, not today.
Not today, Satan.
Yep.
Well, get back to that whenever you can.
Yep.
Man, it's been, we're just on like weird kicks over here where we were doing Kevin Smith movies for a while. And we went back to Shudder, but the one we picked was bad. So Shudder is great. By the way, Shudder is great. And the last time I checked, they're giving everyone a free month with the code SHUTIN.
Nice. So
enter SHUTIN and you get a free month of Shudder. And I love Shudder. I just picked a bad one. Somehow then, you know, we talked about how much we enjoyed Child's Play. It came up just a few minutes ago. This is one of the great discoveries of Number One Movie in America, is that Child's Play is great.
Right.
So, having time, we watched the following four Chucky movies.
Wow.
We have now gone through Child's Play 2 and 3, Bride of Chucky and Seed of Chucky.
Did this go all day? Was this in one day, like continual viewing? Or
I think that was 3 days. Okay. I'm trying not to like sit and binge because we're all supposed to, you know, vary our activities and move around.
Our bodies.
Child's Play 2 is pretty, it does that Halloween thing where it starts almost immediately after and kind of just keeps going.
Mm.
You know, there's more of Chucky trying to get his soul into Andy's body. And it's, you know, if you like Child's Play, here is some more of it. Child's Play 3, not that great. Now Andy is a teenager, gets sent to military school.
Oh, my.
And Chucky follows him there. It does have a great ending where they're in the middle of war games in a military training camp that happens to be next to a carnival. So now we're at the carnival.
All right.
Movies used to love ending at carnivals.
Yeah, they ended in like a spooky dark ride, which now that was worth it. It was not worth everything before that. Bride of Chucky is a lot of fun. Now I know Jennifer Tilly was an Oscar nominee.
She sure was. Bullets Over Broadway.
Bride of, and so then
Meg Tilly for actual good movie.
Yeah.
For Agnes of God, I think.
It gets really silly by Bride of Chucky and Seed of Chucky. Although, I will tell you, Seed of Chucky had a acceptably represented non-binary character in the year 2004. So that's something.
Hey, wow.
It was Chucky and Tiffany's child, Glenn, is presented as non-binary. And they do a halfway decent job of it.
Huh.
That's, I think doing it at all in 2004 is fairly impressive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And is that the end of the story? Is that like, does it end with Seed of Chucky, or are there more?
Oh, there are more. that's followed by Curse of Chucky and Cult of Chucky, which were direct to video. We may get to those, but that's where the particular box set that we bought ended. So we'll figure it out. like, a lot, I know a lot of horror people have done all of the Friday the 13th and all of the Nightmare on Elm Streets. I would put the Child's Play, like, average a little higher than, there were less duds.
Really?
So far in the Child's Play run.
Have you done all of the, all of either of those? I've done all of Nightmare on Elm Street.
I've done all of Nightmare on Elm Street. I mean, like we talked about during the Halloween episodes, that's my favorite, but like 3.5 good movies are spread out over those eight movies. I mean, there's like four and five are really bad, and six is pretty bad too. The worst Child's Play movie I've seen is Child's Play 3, and it was still entirely watchable.
Interesting. Do they all have the, like, do any of them have the same writers?
Most of them do. There's like one creator that's driving the direction of this thing. And controversially, they didn't use any of those people for the remake last year. Super fans blame that for the remake last year being a disappointment.
I would agree.
But that mythology is continuing with the Chucky TV series theoretically debuting this year on Sci-Fi.
Sweet fancy Moses. Okay.
Yep. That was a lot of Chucky content. Does anyone have anything else?
I watched Black Christmas, and that was kind of disappointing. But
the most recent one?
Yeah.
Good message, bad execution.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I was surprised when Cary Elwes showed up and delighted and then disgusted and disappointed and a little concerned. So
that's a journey.
It was an emotional roller coaster.
Well, let's draw a movie for the episode that we're going to record in a week. We're still doing these weekly. We will be doing between 2 and infinity weekly episodes, depending on how this all
goes. It's going to eventually get to like daily.
Right. Like, well, we'll be back in 3 hours. Just give us time to watch the movie. The number is 1090 on the big list. And number 1090 is a movie we've already watched. It's The Sum of All Fears, drawing again.
Okay.
Weird that we, yeah. I can't believe we got the same movie. And then even weirder that it's another
military?
Like, yeah, pseudo Cold War thriller.
Weird.
The new number is 111. Go to a casino and play that. Oh, wait, you can't. Ooh, I don't know if I have strength, but I don't have a veto, so it's up to the two of you. In these difficult times, do you think it is in our best interest to do an episode on Beavis and Butthead Do America?
Fuck no. Veto. Veto!
That was decisive.
I gotta edit in the Empire Records veto again.
I'm exercising my veto, man.
So, I think I know the answer, but just to recap, Camila, you are, it is mid-March, you are currently guaranteed veto of 2020. Now, one of us might get another one with the bingo. But,
yeah, right. This is one of the things that early on, when I saw that it was on the list, I was like, no, this is definitely going to be a veto for me if this thing comes up. So
I saw that movie in the theater. I might have been part of the reason it was the number one movie in America.
Thanks, Robin.
I have no exposure. Like, I didn't watch that when I was younger. I know nothing about it. I mean, I don't know.
I've seen enough Beavis and Butthead episodes to know that there's no fucking way I'm sitting through 2 hours of that. I just won't. Won't do it.
Well, Beavis and Butthead Do America has been vetoed. That means the next thing drawn must be watched. The next thing drawn, which somehow I didn't see at the time, is relatively recent. It is the Mark Wahlberg movie Pain and Gain.
Oh, sweet.
Okay.
I didn't see it. It was like,
yeah, I'm pretty sure I saw it.
I think that it was on in my presence.
Is this the one with, is The Rock in this?
It's The Rock and Mark Wahlberg, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, I saw it. And it's actually, I am happy to watch this again.
Anything with The Rock, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to think of a movie with Dwayne Johnson that is legitimately like, no, don't waste your time. And there isn't really one that I can name.
They're kind of hard pressed because he always has an enjoyable presence and performance. So I was like, you know what? At least Dwayne is here and he's having fun.
Challenge, yes. The second Jumanji?
I haven't watched it yet.
Not good, but not that unpleasant.
Okay.
Like, it keeps popping up in our now streaming, available for rental thing, and Annabeth hasn't seen it yet. If she wants to watch it, I would probably sit through the second Jumanji again. But I'll be happier to sit through Pain and Gain. By the way, speaking of Mary Beth, she is working from home, so she couldn't do the bit that she wanted to do. She wanted to just walk through the background of the podcast and have me go, "What do you think of Crimson Tide?" And she would go, "Is that about periods?" And I would have said, "No, it's about submarines." And she would have said, "It's about periods," and then walk away. That was the bit.
Good bit.
That's all I was thinking about there. And I was like, Crimson Tide. That was the first thing that came to my mind. I was like, no, this is about a menstrual cycle.
They're thinking Crimson Wave. I assume you're referring to women's troubles.
Before we let you go, what was the number one album in America?
I have a guess.
1995. Okay. The current score is tied. Robin 3, Camila 3. You get 2 points if your guess is right. Robin, what is your guess?
My guess is Bedtime Stories, Madonna.
Ooh.
No, not incorrect. You're about in the right era. This is more hints than just tracks. The tracks wouldn't be recognizable, but I will take you through a series of hints. This is a compilation.
Oh.
More specifically, it is a soundtrack.
95?
Yep. A movie soundtrack.
Thanks.
Well, you know, there could be here are some artists featured on the soundtrack. Cypress Hill.
Oh, fuck.
Rick James.
No, I'm definitely thinking of the wrong thing. Cypress Hill.
Two Live Crew.
Oh, I'm not on the right track at all.
Dr. Dre. Ice Cube.
Friday?
Friday. The final clue was going to be Cube is also the star of the movie. Oh. Yes.
That took a lot. Wow. Okay.
Number one album. Friday had a pretty good soundtrack.
Yeah. But originally, what I first thought was that movie with Dennis Leary and he's chasing like...
Oh, Judgment Night.
Yes, thank you.
That soundtrack is amazing,
right?
There's an argument to be made that the Judgment Night soundtrack invented rap rock. Like it's all of the it's all of these early '90s hip hop artists and metal bands where they were like, go to a song together,
and they're like,
be good.
Even like Everlast from House of Pain was in the movie, so yes.
I might listen to the Friday soundtrack when I get back to work. But speaking of which, I think we should go out on this. If you're comfortable, Camila, could the listeners share in your brilliant playlist?
Oh, yeah, sure. I have made a playlist, which I'm happy to find out that a lot of people are enjoying. And it's just the self-isolation. I forget what I called it now.
Social distancing.
Socially distant. It's on Spotify. And I will go ahead and pop the link up on our Twitter feed, just because, you know, everybody needs to discover some new music. And it's not like this is new music, but it's probably a lot of stuff that some people aren't familiar with. Sean, did you see it? Was there anything on there that or Robin, was there anything on there that you had didn't know of before, or that, or anything particularly that was just like, hey, this is my jam, the song slaps?
There were some there were some album tracks in here that I had maybe heard a couple of times. For example, the song that I was literally paused about halfway through is Ape Shit by the Carters. Like, I listened to that when it came out, but I had completely forgotten about it, and it's so good.
That song is the best.
This playlist is a beautiful, wonderful thing, and thank you for bringing it into my life.
Thank you, and you're welcome.
I became an immediate fan of You Gots to Chill by EPMD, which is becoming a little bit of a personal anthem. The big one, I started a jog to it the other day, starting with the Safety Dance. Good pick. After that is Tiffany's I Think We're Alone Now. I never realized that song is awesome.
Isn't it though? Like,
and great cardio.
It is.
Tommy James song is awesome, and every 80s cover of a Tommy James song is even more awesome. See also Money Money.
Yes. So making playlists is one of the things that I like to do anyway. So yes, I just put that together and I will pop the link on our Twitter feed.
Go listen to Camila's playlist, Socially Distant. It's in your room to I Think We're Alone Now, and join us in spirit in that way. Number